Welcome. Thank you so much for being here for the class I entitled Millennials, Epic Fails and Glimmers of Hope. Some of you may have thought, and I don't know if you came under the thinking that epic fails is like all the fails within the generation, but we'll talk about some of that stuff if this is a bait and switch, I'm sorry. My name is Taylor Walling. I serve as one of the teaching ministers at, one of the volunteers, if we're missing a spot. Oh, there is a spot. Awesome. Hopefully. He's on top of it. He's going to go grab a chair. I serve as one of the teaching ministers at the Hills Church in the Fort Worth area. Been there for about 18 months. And, millennials, it's something that you hear a lot about. It's funny. Today, some of you may have been on the millennial track. That was kind of unintentional. At 1:30, Monty Cox from Harding University was talking about emerging adults, which is another way of talking about a phase of millennials' lives that's becoming a trend. And then at 2:30, David Fraze was talking from Lubbock about millennials, and now I'm talking about it. Is there anybody who's like, this is the third millennial class today? Oh, wow, you are a trooper. Way to go. I hope there's not too much repeat. And both of those guys are way smarter than me. They're way more studied. The only advantage I have on them is that I am actually a millennial. So this is a word, I'm going to try and not use it too much in the class today, because it's a word that's become, for me, exhausting. It's a word we've used a lot. There's been a lot of articles, a lot of things said about the millennial generation. And even as I was working on this talk, a church in the Dallas area, and if you were at David Fraze's talk, he showed this video as well. But for those that were not, I want to show it. This was a church was putting on a leadership conference in the Dallas-Fort Worth area about church leadership and reaching out to all kinds of generations. And they were giving a keynote about the millennial generation. And so they decided they wanted to have a fun, engaging way to kick off this talk. And so they had a guy make a video, and I want you to check this out. Ding, 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 ding. He sits inside your local coffee shop, sporting a man bun and facial hair. Somehow he believes, although he has no job, that by his 30s he will be a millionaire. M-I-L-L-E-N-N-I-A-L. Gotta love millennials. M-I-L-L-E-N-N-I-A-L. She posts lots of selfies on her Instagram with a quote that's inspirational. Hopes to change the world by wearing yoga pants, armed with her dreams and knowledge of essential oils. M-I-L-L-E-N-N-I-A-L. Gotta love millennials. Criticism isn't easy for their ears. They feel like they know most everything. See, they grew up with undeserving confidence, cause they got trophies just for participating. M-I-L-L-E-N-N-I-A-L. Gotta love millennials. In a couple of years, they will be in charge, and one will be our president. Oh no. M-I-L-L-E-N-N-I-A.
Please pray for millennials.
Okay. So they show that video, and then they went into a talk that showed that the video was satire. It was a joke. And then it went over really well at the conference, so they thought, hey, this is funny. We're going to share this online. They share it online, not in the context of the keynote that followed that had all the good things to say about the millennial generation. They just post that video and say, hey, this is a joke, something funny we did. We hope you enjoy it. And it's gone viral. This was just last week that this happened. And it has gone viral. And if you look at the Facebook or YouTube comments section underneath this video, it is both a comedy and a tragedy. Because there's two groups who are taking this way too seriously, this particular video. If you read the comments, the first group are millennials who are offended because they didn't realize it was satire. And they, because of the way the video ends, they think it's this sincere plea to pray for the millennial generation who are so messed up and always wearing yoga pants and living in their parents' house and essential oils and all that stuff. And they're super offended. And so they write things like, I would never be part of a church that would do this age bashing. Or, I'm so glad I left your church 5 years ago. You guys suck. And they just get really, really heated. Then on top of that, there's another group taking this way too seriously. And it happens to be older generations who don't realize the video satire either. And they think this church is speaking truth to the millennial generations by making a video like this. And so they begin to complain about how easy the millennials have had it and how cushioned they are. And all of a sudden, this typical online vitriol is going back and forth in this comment section. And the church is just trying to go, the particular church that posted it, it's just a joke. And there's other people going, get a sense of humor. And this whole thing has become a portrayal of the misconceptions, the misunderstandings, and the generational tensions that's rocking the church. I think that's why a class of 330 is full of people. Sitting room on the floor left, for those who, if you want to, but you're going to stand. You're probably a boomer, so you're going to rock it out over there. That's fine. So.
Was that
Spencer? Nice. He came right in play. So here's the thing. I've been in ministry for 6 years, and so compared to a lot of you in this room, that's not a lot of time. Some of you have got decades of church leadership experience, and the one advantage I have as a millennial with the church experience I have is that in the 6 years I've been in full-time ministry, the way God did it, I have ended up in church contexts as a millennial, ministering to and with millennials, at churches that range from over 20,000 people to churches that are less than 100. So whatever your context is, I hope you know I've been in some version of it. And what I want to do today is I want to give you some of the perspective that God's given me over the last 6 years in full-time ministry, seeing the way that millennials have interacted, seeing the way these generations have tried to work together, and especially intergenerational churches, which I'm guessing that would represent a lot of us in this room who are part of predominantly intergenerational churches. So before I launch into what is not necessarily research, but some of my observations, let me give you a little bit of research just so we're on the same page. Some of you, this is going to be a rehash. Now, according to research by Lifeway Research in 2007, 7 in 10 Protestants age 18 to 30, that's both evangelical and mainline denominations, who went to church regularly in high school, said they quit attending by age 23. And 34% of those who said that they quit, 34% said that they had not returned by age 30, even sporadically, even as CEO Christians, Christmas, Easter, one other Sunday, they hadn't even come back for that. So that means, according to this research in 2007, about 1 in 4 young people have and are leaving our churches once they graduate from high school. Like, for good. Not to come back later after several gap years, but for good. On top of that, Pew Research reported in 2014 that over a third of millennials would describe themselves as having no religious affiliation whatsoever. And probably you've heard stats about the nuns and the fact that millennials make a big chunk of that. But more than that, what you may not know, and this is pretty incredible, as of information that was released from the U.S. Census Bureau just last month, millennials are now officially the largest living generation in the United States. This just came out. They have eclipsed every other generation for size, and at 75 million strong plus, they are our largest mission field. So not only are our churches failing to hold on to many young adults, but those are the same young adults that are now making up the largest demographic and mission field in our country. So let me move into a couple of things that for me, I feel like are some important aspects that maybe have felt misunderstood about people my age. And if you're wondering, okay, maybe I'm here and I'm brand new, I don't know much about the discussion about millennials. Depending on what research and what researcher you read, you're going to hear a different stat or a different array of years, birth years, for how they define the millennial generation. My preference is to go simple and just go born, like, you know, 81 to 2000. I've seen that across several different articles and posts and researchers, so I'm just going to go with that age group and say if you're born 81 or after up to the turn of the century, then you're a millennial. Now, there's a couple things that have become popular about this generation. Some people have called them the YOLO generation. Who knows what that means? A few hands up. Who doesn't know what YOLO means? And that's okay. That's okay. It means you only live once. So it's this idea of a generation that goes, hey, we only live once, so we're going to do crazy things. You only live once, so we're going to stay up all night. You only live once, so we're going to drive all the way across the country and try and get into this concert. You only live once, so we're going to go on this crazy trip. You only live once, so ... But there's a flip side to the YOLO generation idea about millennials, and that is, even though you've got YOLO, you've also got FOMO. Who knows what FOMO stands for? Okay, a few people. What does it stand for?
Fear of missing out.
Fear of missing out. So amongst the generation that says, okay, you only live once, and so we're going to live life up, we're going to do big things, we're going to have fun, there's also this ever-present FOMO that has come through social media, I would argue. Because every time that you post something, every time that you're doing something fun, or you're having a meal, and you're taking a picture of your food for Instagram, or you're Snapchatting something, every time that you're updating the world about your goings-on, you are seeing in your newsfeed on Facebook, Twitter, or wherever you're looking, you are seeing what everyone else is up to that you're missing out on. And so it was actually my dad who at one point we were talking, he goes, so why would millennials, why won't they commit to anything? I mean, ever since he's been here at Pepperdine on staff for about now a little over a year and a half, and for him, he's asking questions of me, like, you know, he's being around these younger kids and they won't commit to anything. And FOMO is a big part of that. This idea of going, well, I want to keep my options open because there's always the potential to miss out on something. Now, let me get to one of the first epic fails. It was actually referenced in this video, and it is a misperception, I believe, about the millennial generation. And that is the whipping boy joke of the participation trophy. Okay, I grew up doing sports. How many received participation trophies growing up? Okay, a couple. Yeah, brave to admit it. I appreciate it. I got some participation trophies, but that does not mean that I don't understand the difference between winning and losing games. I still understand that. I still understand competition. And more than that, those who joke about this stuff, they're really joking about the Gen Xers and Boomers, the older generation, the parents who said, we want to do this for these kids. Like, I didn't decide as a millennial when I got into soccer as a 5-year-old, I really want a trophy whether I win or not. It was other people who made that choice on my behalf. But more than that, and I don't know if you saw this, this kind of went viral a while back. James Harrison, he's a linebacker for the Steelers. He posted on Instagram a picture of two participation trophies that his sons had received for playing sports. And he wrote out this huge rant, basically going, to the day I die, I'm going to teach these kids that sometimes your best isn't enough, and that's just okay. Hashtag Harrison family values. And it went viral, and it became another kind of joke about the millennial and the younger generation that they need this sense of being validated just for showing up. Meanwhile, I heard somebody joke about this guy going, wait, this is a guy who plays for the Steelers. And he's getting, how about this for a participation trophy? Whether they win a championship or not, dude's getting a $1 million contract. I'm just saying. But on top of that, let me give you a counterbalance, a counterweight to the joke of the participation trophy about the younger generation. Over here, you've got the participation trophy that says, You want to be given something for doing nothing. Meanwhile, I present to you the unpaid internship. Okay, those of you who are 40 and up, how many of you were asked to be or told that you needed to take an internship that was not paying? A job where you were not paid. Okay, we got one person. One person out of this room who were told in order to advance your career, in order to grow, in order to continue to develop, you need to make no money. And in some cases, you need to pay. Like I heard about this one internship in which it was a university internship, and this guy's being interviewed for an article, and I think this was ProPublica, but he says, I calculated that I would have to pay $966 in gas and parking because they wouldn't cover any of those expenses. Even parking on campus was not covered for this unpaid intern. So now it's a pay to work situation for this person, because of the expenses aligned with it. And here's what I want you to understand. You're looking at you're talking about a generation of people who one stat said that between those who were graduating from college in the 80s to those who were graduating closer to the 2000s the graduating classes that are lined up with Gen Xers versus those who are graduating more in the 2000s. The difference between them in terms of going into an internship at all, and especially an unpaid internship, was something like less than 20% that grew all the way up to 86% of college graduates who are heading into internship positions with little or no pay. You can joke about participation trophies and say they want something they want something for doing nothing, but we've got a lot of people who are my age who are working hard and they're getting nothing for what they're doing for a while. And then we joke, like in the video, about the fact that these millennials, they have a perpetual failure to launch issue. They can't seem to get out of their parents' houses. They can't seem to get their money together to get financially independent. But we're talking about people who, many of them, are, in order to advance their career, they've been put in a system in which they have to work for free. You see how this is an absolute lose-lose scenario for millennials? To save face in the articles and in the blogs and in the posts, and yet at the same time, behind the scenes, be working so hard, putting in all kinds of hours to get experience and yet no pay to try and advance their career in a job market that all of us can agree for the most part has been, at the very least, rocky. So we're talking about a generation that we joke in this way, but we're not actually being fair to get a good counterbalance on what this generation is facing and what they're struggling with. Now, on top of this, here's what I want to drill down on for half a second. From a church leadership standpoint, if this is a group of people and a generation who's been walking into unpaid internships, why do they do this? Why are they willing to work for free? Why are they willing to sweat and bleed for organizations? Well, here's a couple reasons. These are, I think personally. This is not research. This is Taylor. Here's what I think. First off, and this is a fact, many of them are told that it will secure or improve their career prospects. So they're told right out of the gate, in order to advance in your career, man, if you're in journalism, if you're in business, if you're trying to become a lawyer, if you're gonna grow as a graphic designer, you have to do this unpaid internship. And the best of those are in the most expensive cities. So again, they're put in a place where in order to reach their dreams, to do what they want to do, they have to do this. But reason number two is that they're passionate about what they're doing. They believe in the craft that they have, and they want to pursue and grow in what that is. And reason number three is that they buy into the vision of the organization or the project. So for a second, let's just drill down, and from a church standpoint, the church no longer has the social guilt of you need to come to church to advance in society, to make network connections, to not be seen as a pariah, you have to come to church. That is over with. It's been over for a long time. I see a lot of you nodding your heads. You understand this. So the other two are really what you can leverage if you think about it this way. If you think, if I want to ignite the millennials in my church, if I want to ignite the young potential leaders, then first off, I have to look at what are they passionate about doing? And am I doing anything that connects with that? How can I listen to them? How can I look at their lives or at their Facebook page and see what they're up to, what they're passionate about, and how can I connect that with how they follow Jesus? Let me give you... Can you discover... Let me put it this way. This is an easy example. With music. I was a worship leader before. I was a teaching minister, and that was in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I had to kind of get a band together. And what I realized was that there were a lot of young players who wanted to be part of it. And different, with the a cappella teams that I was a part of and helping to lead, we had three or four teams. We had a lot of people, a lot of great singers, and so we could rotate people out. And there almost got to this sense of, like, if I ever asked a singer to sing two or three times a month, that was just really going overboard. They just weren't ready to sacrifice and give that kind of time. Meanwhile, we start a band, and I've got a high school kid who says, I want to play every week. And he becomes, among with some other younger people, some of the most dedicated volunteers that I had. Because I realized, I found what they were passionate about. One of them was a whiz kid at technology. And I pulled him in and showed him, okay, here's what we're doing with our slides. Here's what we're doing with some of our technology. Can you help us with it? And he jumped in. And he again, was one of the most dedicated volunteers because I found what he was passionate about. Now, those are pretty easy examples. But I challenge you to think about, maybe, here, let me stretch you. I don't know if your church has a Facebook page or a Twitter feed or an Instagram account. And a lot of the smaller churches that I've seen that have these kind of things, they don't do them well. They don't operate with them the way that humans operate with social media. Humans don't just give event updates. Humans don't just give ad promos. Humans engage in social media. And the best organizations have people that interact personally in the way that they do this. At one of the churches that I was at, we were trying to get better at social media, and so I suggested, why don't we find some of these teenagers who are great at this personally? They do this already on their own. They're on there all the time. Why don't we leverage that and give them permission to help post some pictures of events that they come to anyway. Why don't we empower them to figure out some favorite scriptures and schedule some posts in? Why don't we enable them to do what they already do well, but do it on behalf of and for the church? And you know what I heard back? We're not comfortable allowing them to speak for the church. Leadership was nervous and scared, even though there are ways that as an administrator you can filter and go, I have to approve posts before they're posted. Even with all those checks and balances, all I got back was resistance. Because they were nervous, because it was different, because they just weren't sure. And maybe you're in a church, maybe you're in a context where technology is scary, but I'm telling you, if you will look for ways to find what they're already passionate about and what they like to do, and leverage that, and give them an in, give them a voice to be able to be part of that, I think you'll find that you'll awaken something in them that's a lot better than them wanting to feel entitled just because they showed up. Secondly, they buy into the vision of the organization or the project. That's why they do an unpaid internship. That's why they're willing. In fact, one study showed it wasn't just about the internship. Long term, there was a study that showed a majority of millennials were willing to take, I think it was 76%, were willing to take a 15% or greater pay cut to work in an environment in which they believed in what the company was doing. And you jump back one or two generations when providing for the family was paramount, they're not going to do that. They're not going to take less pay for something they believe in more, for the most part. And yet, statistically, a generation that seems like they're less and less religious wants to take less pay to do work that's more important to them. So how can we get our millennials to buy? How could you get me to buy into the vision of your church? Let me give you one or two suggestions. The biggest suggestion would be get young adults in on the ground floor of crafting and refining that vision. Now let me flesh that out. I've seen the pattern of church leaders crafting and creating vision. And for a lot of them, the pattern starts with either an eldership or maybe with a lead pastor or a preaching minister who helps to shape this, and then it's brought to brought to the eldership as a whole. Sometimes a smaller committee will work on something, the mission statement or the vision statement, and then they'll parse it all out, and then they'll lay it out to the church. And what I would encourage you to think about is in crafting and thinking about the future of your church. I'm not suggesting you get a panel of millennials who are going to vote up and down what you wrote in there. And I'm not suggesting that they get the final say. I'm saying at least give them a voice at the table in some part of the process. Choose to go, you know what, if our senior minister is the one who's crafting the vision for the next 15 years or for the next 5 years, why don't we at least set up a forum where he can sit down with a group of 5-10 bright young minds in our church and go, hey, here's some of what we're thinking about, and we want to get you in on the ground floor. We want your feedback. We value your voice. Give them an opportunity and ask them questions and listen. And then show them what you're thinking about and hear their feedback. I'm not saying you have to take all of it. We're not I'm going to speak in broad strokes about this generation, but every person in this generation is different the same way that every person in your generation is different. To generalize any particular group is not going to be effective. But what I am saying is these voices are valuable. And if you really are committed to your church not dying, if you're really committed to passing on leadership to the next generation, you need to get them in on the ground floor now, not 15 years from now. You don't need to wait until they could become the president of the United States before they're allowed to speak into the vision of your church. It needs to be earlier than that. Now, I've seen churches take a different approach at trying to engage and work with and attract millennials. And so let me talk about another epic fail. Rather than perceiving the participation trophy for a whole generation and going, oh, you guys just, you're not really going to work hard. You just want stuff for doing nothing. The other thing I've seen, and this isn't a conceptual understanding of the generation, it's an attempt to attract them, ill-conceived church makeovers. Let me talk about a couple of these. The first is what I would call the paint and switch. Rather than the bait and switch, they go, you know what? We're gonna do a facelift on our church. And facelifts look different for everybody. For some of you, a facelift would be, we're going to get a new website that'll finally get those kids in. We're going to get a new website, and it's going to be attractive, and it's going to make sense, and it's going to be a good digital front door. Is a website important? Yes, absolutely. But if you think a website is going to fix or solve or engage millennials long term, you're missing it. Meanwhile, I've seen people go, you know what? We're finally gonna make a change, and we're gonna get a band. And I was part of a church that went from a cappella to a both and setup. And during that time, the leadership was convinced if we make this change, we're going to bring in more young people. And what they found in the transition on the back end of that was that for the most part, that was not the magic bullet that they were thinking it was going to be. And they had invested a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of leadership chips. They'd cashed in a lot of leadership chips to go, we're going to make this change. And what they saw on the back end, and meanwhile, here's the other thing I saw. When this happened, I was the worship leader, and so at this service, the instrumental service, I saw people come, and we had new people come in for sure. But it was also because it was the later service. We always had more people at the later service. So I'm not sure if it was necessarily what they were thinking. But when new people came, once they actually got into the church and they realized that the systems of the church had not changed and were in many ways antiquated, more than that, they realized and saw this church, the particular church, was pretty insular. I mean, it was just really comfy with itself. And so outreach was not necessarily their gift. It was a warm, welcoming environment on a Sunday, but everybody already had friends, and nobody had extra room for those new people who were coming in, and there were bigger system problems at play. And so these young people, I saw lots of young people come in, try and get a feel for things, and then they just bailed because it was a total paint and switch. The other thing I've seen is what I would call the paint and collapse. This is when you try and change, and I heard about one church. This is in Oklahoma, and a rural church that in many ways was pretty healthy and doing okay. But then the leadership decided, you know what, we need to reach out to younger people. And so pretty quickly, and not necessarily with the best systems in place, they made a pretty drastic change. Everything about the church just about changed. And it made the members feel like, what happened to our church? The whole thing changed. And the church ended up folding. When they tried this change, they tried to make this new setup that would grab millennials and attract them, And the whole setup was failed. It was doomed from the start because it wasn't true to who the church was. There's too many churches that are trying to implement strategies with the best of intentions, but they're not true to the personality of the church. Look, if you're a church that most of your members are not on Facebook or Twitter, like, don't try and do a selfie on stage on Sunday. If you're a church that's trying, like, don't do a hashtag to promote your sermon series and think, like, oh, that'll engage them. They'll want to tweet more about it. Because if no one else is tweeting, they're not going to show up at that party. It's like Google's version of social media that nobody goes to. It's just not going to work. So don't, if you're in a church that you guys are a little bit older or you're a family church predominantly, don't try and be something you're not. The churches that I've seen that thrive with younger adults, in many ways, they're true to who they are. And who they are might be a little bit more younger. It might be a culture that's a little bit more innovative. It might be a culture that's a little bit more hip. But there's other churches that aren't. In fact, Barna research showed that when polled, a majority of millennials, when they were talking about their ideal church, between modern and classic, for some reason, a lot of millennials chose classic. They trended in a particular study from that was released in 2014 in the book Making Space for Millennials. Barna research found that millennials in many ways trended more traditional, more conservative than they had expected. Now, what happens is that the churches that grow the most and are exploding and end up on the front page or featured in Outreach magazine, I was in the backyard of one of those churches. It's called Elevation Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. It exploded in the mid-2000s, and then I joined on that. I joined a staff in Charlotte in 2011, and so I was in the backyard of this church. And there was always this temptation to try and do things their way to get the people they were getting. But what I realized over my time in Charlotte was that was ill-conceived from the get-go, because we were trying to be something that we just weren't. And many of our leaders, we were projecting on the congregation what we hoped they would become that wasn't actually tied to who we were as a church, what was true about us, and what was best, what was strongest about us as a congregation. Now, let me talk about this for a second. On the other side of this epic fail of ill-conceived church makeovers, there is a glimmer of hope. It doesn't have to do with paint. It doesn't have to do with a website. It doesn't have to do with what your music style is. It has to do with the word discipleship. What's fascinating to me is that in 6 years, at every church that I've been a part of, save for one church, and that church happened to be the smallest, all of the largest churches that I've been a part of, and that ranges in size from less than 1,000 to over 20,000, every single church has gone through with their vision or lead team or eldership a serious discussion about evaluating, are we actually making disciples? Churches of all sizes and all cultures are asking this question. And what I'm seeing is a reemergence of discipleship. Growing up, I'm a preacher's kid, and growing up, I did not hear the word discipleship a lot. I heard the word disciples, but the concept of discipleship was not something that I heard talked about a lot. And yet it's becoming more and more popular to talk about it. And here's what I'm noticing. I want to tell you a story about, to head into this point. There's a young guy named Jake, at one of the churches that I was working at. Jake was involved, good guy. He wanted to buy into the vision. He wanted to buy into everything that was there. But in a pretty short time, Jake left our church to go be in a different church. And one of the things that we found on the back end when one of our team members talked with Jake, it was that Jake's a musician, and so he played some with us, and then he went over and played at this church one weekend. And when he played at this church, the first weekend he's there, one of the ministers, one of the team members, got very, what I would say, almost like invasive with him, but spiritually set a tone for him right from the get-go of going, if you're going to be part of our church and if you're going to be part of our team, we need you to know that we care about your purity. We know you're dating somebody. We care about your pursuit of holiness. We care. And from the get-go, got super serious with him. And some of you would hear that. I heard that initially and thought, isn't that what would drive someone away? And what's incredible is that for this young man, it was what pulled him to that church. To go, this church is serious about discipleship. This church is going to challenge me from day one to grow. And guess what? Millennials, have grown up as a generation who have been challenged in a positive way. They like the idea of a large task that needs to be accomplished. If you look at the Disney movies that we grew up with, and a lot of the films and narratives and books that we bought into, and we love these stories. These narratives tie in with some. I mean, they're the same thing that other generations have tied to with other books and other movies. But it's this idea of there's a hill to climb. There is some obstacle to overcome. And spiritually, you can tap into that in the pursuit of discipleship with millennials. But what that means is that they want somebody who's going to ask them the hard questions. And for some of you, you think, no, I can't do that. That's going to drive them away. What I argue is that's going to help them know that you're serious. That you're serious about the pursuit of holiness. Because in a generation in which, here's a stat for you. This is from the book Generational IQ. Startlingly, 34% of millennials interviewed said they didn't know what makes something right or wrong, although most could explain some basis for their moral reasoning. A third of millennials that are growing up in a de-church or softly church context are getting to a place, and I helped to minister with young adults at the Hills. And I've talked to guys and girls who are making choices that for them are kind of a gray area, and scripturally they're not. And some of the most healthy, beneficial conversations that I have to have with them are to lay out very specifically, here's what God asks of you. Here's what God calls us to. Here's how the Holy Spirit can empower you to live in this way of holiness. And if you're not willing to make these sacrifices, you need to understand that we've got some idolatry going on. We've got problems. We've got some fracturing of your understanding of who God is in your life. These are gospel conversations that they need, and in so many churches, they're not getting it. They're getting a, we want you to be here, but we don't want to step on your toes too bad. I'm not going to say millennials anymore. Young people need their toes stepped on. It is spiritual formation at work. They need fathers and mothers in the faith who are willing to say hard things to them and to bring scripture before them that's going to challenge them. This is discipleship 101 that they so desperately need. And the churches that are giving it to them, at least in some form, are the churches that I believe are continuing to grow. Now, one other story about discipleship that I think is important. There's a young man, we'll call him Jack. Jack was part of one of the churches that I was in, and Jack was a nice guy. He got into some gang-related activity, but was still on the fringe involved with one of the ministries I was working with. And over the course of a few months, I saw Jack completely change. I saw his clothing change, his demeanor changed, everything about him changed, and he began to refer to these gang members as brothers. And everything that was happening with Jack, his Facebook feed, if you were reading his updates online, it looked like his life was falling apart. He was always crying out for help in some form or another online, and yet he had this community. But it wasn't the church. It was a gang. And I realized I was put in a place where what I could offer in the current ministry setup of like, well, we've got a small group that meets on Wednesday, and we've got a class on Sunday, was never going to compete with the discipleship he was experiencing in a gang. We've got serious problems if powers of evil are doing discipleship better than we are as the church. And millennials are desperate for that kind of community. They want to call somebody brothers and sisters and mean it. Look at the sitcoms that have become most popular over the last, 20, 30 years. And this even goes all the way back to the Cheers type and Happy Days. But once you get to, like, Friends and How I Met Your Mother and New Girl, we're talking about people who basically, like, some of them live together. They're with each other every day. And you're seeing this picture of, like, there's not a lot of sense of family, but there's a sense of family. You don't see as many, I mean, moms and dads and brothers and sisters are featured characters that come in on seasonal episodes, but for the most part, it's this little tight-knit group that they're all connected to. And they want some version of that. They want some version of Acts 2. And right now, with our systems in place, we just go, well, you know what? We're just going to, like, add them to our calendar, and we're going to add a class, or we'll add a Saturday morning thing, which is a horrible idea because nobody wants to get up on a Saturday morning if they're under 30, but that's just me. we choose solutions that to me just don't make sense and really are never going to compete with what the world offers, because these people are being discipled by their roommates. Maybe not in the way of following Jesus, but maybe in the way of finding entertainment as most valuable. These people are being discipled at work. The people they're spending the most time with, that's who's discipling them. And so we have to up our game. And some of you need to adopt some Timothys. Some of you need to choose and or set up systems in place to go, we're gonna get serious in our church about investing and asking a lot of our millennials. And that leads me to this last epic fail and glimmer of hope. The biggest epic fail probably that I've seen is that churches bench their Timothys. Let me flesh this out. This is a generation. I'm part of a generation that's been exposed to writings and teachings about leadership more than, I would argue, any previous generation. You look at what's online, TED Talks, blogs, articles, books, podcasts, and there's a wealth of insight available that is telling every single listener, you can be a leader. You can step up. And the principles for how to do that, how to cast a vision, how to lead an organization. And they're hearing this not just in church, but in culture at large. And then they come into church and they want to be a part of the greatest revolution that's ever happening. And then what are they offered to do? Depending on the church, what we say is, okay, we're so glad you're here. And they're thinking, I'm ready to change the world. And it's like, okay, you can welcome people at the door. And they come and they're like, I'm ready to do something big. I'm so excited to be part of this church. And it's like, you can help run slides. Now, is there anything wrong with being on the greeting team, people at the door, running slides? No, there's nothing wrong with that. But what you need to understand, for those of you who are older, the high achievers in your church, those people who have great business savvy and are leaders and executives, those people, what I have seen is a pattern of finding roles that fit that person. And playing up to the skills that they have to offer the church. Meanwhile, we've got a generation of millennials who, many of them, are thinking of themselves in that way. They've been taught and told, you can do something great, you're a leader, you're awesome, and you can change the world, you can start a nonprofit, and they're seeing their friends and their classmates and their coworkers do just that. But then they get into church, and it's like, oh, no, you're not ready for that. Generational IQ says millennials are confident. Their parents and teachers convince them they're special, and millennials believe it. In one survey, 96% of millennials agreed or somewhat agreed with this statement. 96%. I can do something great. Now, don't miss this. Not one person polled. Not one millennial polled. Not one barista, not one intern graphic designer, not one person who cleans pools and is still living with their mom, not one person disagreed strongly. Meaning, if they were offered the chance of, I agree strongly, I agree, I'm not sure, I disagree strongly, not one millennial disagreed strongly with the statement, I can do something great. Even those who disagree can't disagree strongly. There's something in their heart that says, I have the potential to do something great. And the church is one of those awesome opportunities to show them that, to let them be part of that. And you're thinking, well, you just said they're not gonna do the things that we need them to do. We need somebody to meet people at the door. We need somebody to run slides. We need somebody to help with these servant roles. And this is where we can speak into the millennial desire for greatness and what Jesus says about greatness. In Matthew 20, he's talking to his disciples and he says, whoever among you wants to become great, you got to become a servant. This is where they need, millennials need challenged the way that everybody else needs challenged. But you got to do it in the context of what their heart is being pulled toward. What the desire is, what you see in that particular individual. And these particular observations, they're not going to work with every millennial that you encounter. And you maybe have somebody in the back of your head this whole talk and you're like, this person does not apply. And that's okay, not everybody's the same. But there's a lot of them that feel this way, that want to be part of a movement. So here's one more glimmer of hope that I see. A fusion of natural confidence with supernatural calling. Just read that statistic from Generational IQ about this young generation who's been bred with confidence in their veins, who's not willing to strongly disagree that they could do something great. They believe they could do something great. Maybe the church is the place for that. I think it is the place for that. And so what we need is we need to look for examples and look for ways to pull them into leadership. I'm not saying that means you need to go out and, like, you know, if you've got a 50-something preacher, you don't need to fire that person and try and hire a 20-year-old. What I'm saying is you need to look for ways, and maybe it's that 50-year-old going, you know what, I'm gonna give up 5 extra weekends a year, not to be gone, not to be on vacation, but because I see some young men who are gifted communicators who I could pour into. To take advantage and look at that, I gotta wrap up here, but let me give you just one quick thing. Three quick things. I'm my father's son. don't just add millennials to your calendar. You need to include them in your calendar. If you got an intern right now, or you got an intern this summer, they want to sit with you at the lunch where you're having that hard conversation. They want to see you in those contexts. They want to be included in your calendar, not added to your calendar. Millennials don't just want events, they want investment. They want to see, not can you just throw something that you want me to come to, but are you ready to pour into my life? And lastly, don't pander. Give Timothy's a voice at the table rather than trying to manufacture your version of that voice. And if you're at a church where you feel like this is never going to happen, we're never going to change, you still have an opportunity to invest in church planning and support healthy younger churches. Statistics show younger church plants trend younger. It's just how it is. Usually there's more work to be done. There's more setup. There's more tear down. It's poor to church. It's something like that. And young people are ready for that because it makes them feel like I'm part of the grassroots movement. And maybe that's where you need to be. All right. Well, I've gone over on time. Thank you so much for being here. If you have any questions, I'll be up here. Thank you.